Hey, you're back with another episode of the Geek Whispers. I'm Matthew Brender.
I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And the three of us have been thinking a lot about one of those key topics that comes to mind. It's a bit of a social media identity crisis, if you will. Where does social sit in the org chart? And do we really have a career path? Or are we part of this bigger thing happening in the marketing and technical worlds? So we're just going to start right out with some opinions. Amy, I know you feel strongly about where social should or should not sit. Just give us a little idea of where you stand.
Well, in some ways, I feel like I'm going to be the negative person. I'm going to go ahead and be the curmudgeon for this episode because I have a lot of thoughts about where I think social shouldn't sit. And I actually do believe that it can stand on its own as an independent department, but you have to understand what it will do if you hold social out separately. So my question has long since been, can it survive on its own as an independent thing, or should it be more integrated, less talked about and more integrated, more embedded with either the technology, within marketing? We were joking before we pushed record here, if nobody's ever put social media in engineering, and maybe that would be a wonderful, wonderful mashup. But so sometimes it sits in publicity. I think when it sits in publicity, the risk there, and again, fantastic people who are publicists, many of them I count as friends. We've had folks on the show.
And,
so
and by,
it's not a slam.
By publicity,
yeah.
You mean what is sometimes called PR. At our
yes.
joint, we call it global communications. Because publicity
yes.
sounds like you're like working to get Justin Bieber in Us magazine.
Or taking well, pictures isn't? Of Blue Ivy and selling them for a lot of money.
And again, who isn't? So, but yes, so if it sits in PR or global communications, I think the risk becomes that it becomes a one-way medium. So just a bullhorn. I think if you put it in marketing, it can be a bit of a redheaded stepchild, and I get to say that as a redhead. I think that when it sits by itself, the risk is that you start to be so disconnected from the business that you risk, again, being lopped off. Like any department, whenever you're sort of centralized and organized and people aren't quite sure what you do or what you do is funny or strange, then you risk removal. Because it can be a clean cut in the case of a reorganization. So I think it's difficult for where to put it. I'm sort of a fan. Cisco has a hub and spoke model. So full disclosure, right, since I work for Cisco, we have a centralized social media team that does a lot of brand level, sort of air cover for the brand and lots of internal training. And then there are a number of us who are practitioners who don't aren't formally referred to as social media. It's not really part of our job title, but it's how we function or how we engage in our particular marketing programs. And I think that can have a lot of benefits. We can serve as translators between the different business units, between the technologists and that hub, so that there's always a pool of resources that's centralized, but you know, the exact thing a hub and spokes is supposed to do. But as individual spokes, we can also be a bit of an expert in our particular domain. And for me, I sit in the data center group. And so I'm able to engage with the technologist and form those relationships. And we've talked before on this show, it's trust relationships. I think that's what makes social media successful, is creating trust and not being just a broadcast mechanism and not being just any one of those things. So I've been talking for an hour. What do you guys think?
Interesting. Well, interesting framework. Yeah. John, where do you stand on it?
Well, I'll tell you the way we're set up and then...
I'm much more interested in what you think about how you're set up, but I'll let you ease into it.
We'll start one place and we'll go someplace else. We're a hub and spoke, and our central is in corporate marketing. But we have an interesting DNA, which is very unusual and would be hard to replicate. Our DNA actually comes out of our community group. So we were the community group in support 10 years ago. And we migrated over to corporate marketing. And then, because we own the community, and then we own the blog platform, and now we own the Twitter and Facebook accounts, or at least kind of management or support of the Twitter and Facebook accounts. And we got YouTube just because, I don't know, YouTube was social for some reason. So we own the YouTube channels too, not the rest of web marketing or not the rest of the online presence. But we come to it from a community standpoint. So we're very bottom up in our outlook. And the other weird thing is that we we're all technical in our backgrounds. The whole group is filled with people who are either engineers or web developers.
What?
And so, yeah, it's weird. And some of that may be some sort of weird self-selection bias. I'm not sure. But we like to think of ourselves as being I sometimes have marketing people, marketing managers come to me who I swear to God, they don't even know how to type, like let alone script or like make an image or log in somewhere or Telnet or anything. they're like little Tyrannosaurus Rex with no arms, right?
And big mouths.
Yeah. If you are a modern marketing manager and you do not know how to jump on a live podcast or something and do a quick live one-on-one, and if you do not know a tiny bit of HTML, like even, you know, you're not scared of putting in a B or an I or something in there, if you can't do any of those things, you're really helpless. You're really at the mercy of agencies and your own internal processes. You can't do anything for yourself. So we do a lot of our own – we're kind of our own agile development team. And that works out really well for us. So when something needs to happen and it's going to take the regular process 6 months, we just do it. And that served us well because a lot of times the social strategy intersects with the social the web implementation in some ways. Now, we don't do a lot of heavy lifting these days, but we have that attitude.
Yeah, but so, the consultative nature that you can offer is huge because – I've certainly noticed, and I'm interested to hear if it's true with you as well, Amy and John, that a lot of the money coming out of our budget goes into technology that enables people to see our message and touch it and feel it, interact with it either mobily or online or in-event experience. And that's a lot of tech. And if you don't have somebody on your team that knows how to talk to technologists about how that needs to feel in their language, it falls on its face pretty fast.
I love what you're talking about there in terms of that translation layer, which is a little bit in my hour-long dialogue there was trying to get through. I agree. And I also love John's point about being at the mercy of an agent or someone else. It's interesting that I would say a common thread between the three of us is we want to be able to roll up our sleeves and do something, which is not the way everybody interprets social media. Social media can get an incredibly bad rap, much like the term publicity. If it's, you know, seen as 13-year-old teeny boppers, Justin Bieberization of America, you know, people taking pictures of breakfast.
It's more like, I need social media. Let me hire an intern. And
the college intern, she can tweet.
Yeah.
Of course. Yep. Yeah.
And that's it. So yeah. Full disclosure, on the EMC side, we, again, follow a hub and spoke, but definitely sitting in the corporate marketing world where our corporate marketing social media team, you know, holds the standard bearer. And then we soothsay to our different individuals that sit inside the BUs, but in the different business units, excuse me. But what's interesting, in the business units, they're all also in the marketing section of the business unit. So we definitely serve the same master in the end.
That's a great point, Matt. Always we got to look at our goals and what we want out of it. I think, you know, there's none of us. So none of us work in PR. None of us work for corporate comms. Our PR is now called influencer marketing, which I find very confusing. But, you know, they bring a lot to the table too, which in terms of both in terms of connection with journalists and influencers, as well as in if they're good, right, storytelling, right? They should know how to tell the story of the company, which should be one of the things that we're doing with social media, one of the things anyway.
Yeah.
What I find, though, is that they're not used to working – if they're a traditional, let's call them PR, whatever they call themselves, they are a little more they're a little more used to working behind the scenes. And we've all made our mark, and we've all worked from this bottom-up perspective of personal brand and, you know, personally getting involved with the community and personally, you know, being one of the community. And my perception is that people who are working from a comms perspective have a little more of a behind-the-scenes perspective. Not that they're not hands-on, but they're not used to being bylined as themselves. They'll hire writers or they'll hire – they'll hire people to work with, or they'll work with journalists instead.
Yeah, I think my cat agrees with you for those listening in and hearing the random meows now and again.
She's in control. it's like an abstraction layer, if you will, not to nerd out here, but I think that these groups, they programatize social media in a way, and think about it again at scale, broader, and so by choice or by necessity in some ways, I guess, or people feeling like that's how social media should be done, you're right, they aren't bylining it, and which has costs and benefits, because it allows more than one person to DJ, say, a corporate account, so that there's no downtime and it's not tied to a particular personality. But it also has that slight disembodied feel where it's not personal, and you don't have to own it. If you do something, you're not as responsible to the community.
Yeah, and Amy, you keep mentioning trust, and I read this line the other day that has really stuck with me. It's that the fact is that consumers control the conversation now, and users trust user-generated content more than traditional media.
There's a book that speaks to this in some ways. Highly recommend for anybody who hasn't read it, called The Speed of Trust. And it is an amazing – it ties back into the podcast we did with Sunshine in terms of trying to get in rapport and trying to really engage with people. The basic premise being that if you do business from a place of reliability and trust, so you perform your duties in a way that is trustworthy and you trust other people and presume they are also acting in a trustworthy way, that everybody proceeds more quickly and more efficiently, and actually business gets done much more effectively for everyone, as opposed to some sort of backstabbing, treacherous means of approaching. So fairly simple logic, but it makes me think that never has that been more true and more public than in the social realm, where I can understand how it gives some traditional folks or traditional approaches, including organization charts, which are not people, but the people who set up those organizational charts, heartburn, frankly, because social media can be very disruptive, because it does take that sort of glossy, comfortable, predictable, nobody ever gets fired for using a Gartner white paper as part of a marketing spend. It's uncomfortable. So it can work really well, but it can also be pretty frightening.
All right, let's pivot here. Let's pivot to a perfect world, a beautiful world where unicorns are farting rainbows and flying above us all the time. What does your perfect social media-based role or team look like in this world, John Mark Troyer?
Well, Matt, we're already living in a perfect world, so we've solved that problem. If you'll notice, all of us described a hub and spoke model, and I've even seen people describe hub spokes of spokes, but that's the same sort of thing. It's a distributed model. Social becomes part of the fabric. Social becomes part of the digital marketing toolkit of everybody. And it's a core competence, at least somehow not being afraid of using these channels. Not everybody has to be out there on Twitter being a cheerleader, rah-rah, or talking about the intricacies of, data tiering or something like that. But everybody's got to be comfortable with it and has got to be able to use it and call on the resources they do have. And we see that in all three of our very large organizations. So in some ways, I think everybody's approaching it in the right way. I think the closer you can get to the customer, which in at least in our giant organizations is the business unit and the individual teams within the business unit, the better off we are. Now, if we turn the dial even farther and go back in time a little bit, the Wayback Machine, let's go back to Sun Microsystems with Jonathan Schwartz at the helm. And he, from the top down, dictated or encouraged or demanded that everybody blog. And he really wanted every single person in the organization to blog. He wanted all the engineers to blog and all the product managers. And that was in the what year was it? I don't want to embarrass myself. Whenever that was, it was fascinating because it gave you a really interesting picture of the organization from the inside out. Didn't stop from going out of business. But it was definitely a top-down, let's all start sharing sort of a culture, which was a fascinating experiment. I don't know. I think all of our organizations are hitting an appropriate middle ground. So we're already there. We've already killed and eaten the unicorn. We're done.
Amy, how do you feel we're doing on our trajectory to a perfect social world? And, you know, coming from a different angle, it doesn't have to be about your business. We can talk about the industry as a total.
I think that you have to have people inside your organization that are trained to do the business of social. And I think ideally, I actually do believe in the hub and spoke model. I think the hub in some ways needs to be smaller and not overpower the spokes, because I think your goal should be to be a bit small and mighty in your central organization that provides air cover training, et cetera, strategy. And that you need to have high levels of engagement with your field lieutenants so that you don't become top heavy, you know, all hub, no spoke. And I think we're all kind of in an evolution toward that. We've mentioned this word a few times too. I've often thought that community is social 2.0, that we are kind of transitioning things back into the hands of the people. And like you said, the trust relationships and the audience and the influencers around us, that we can frame it up and try to make it neat and make it another marketing program, and we'll have some success, but the real power lies in the hands of the space between our efforts, our departments, whatever organization we choose, and the people we're trying to reach.
That's great. And I'm going to be the contrarian this time around. I think there's still a lot of growing to reach a sort of perfect balance of the force of social inside a massive multi-billion dollar corporation like all three of us work at. And I think it takes getting out of a single wheelhouse and being more of a practice and a discipline that's cross-functional by design to include both, you know, we all are coming out of different sort of corporate marketing angles. But I see the power of having stakeholders in the PR department. I see the power of having stakeholders not just in the marketing departments of business units, but in the systems engineering teams, the people that need the actual feedback to actually iterate and improve upon the products itself, and breaking down those barriers of thinking of it as a conversation mechanism. That's good that we're there, but it's still a conversation about how to get people to be interested in our products, and not enough about how to improve our products through transparency and through a tiny bit of crowdsourcing in a very intentional way.
Do you think social should sit then in customer service?
You know what? Ours organically came up in customer service because, as we've spoken about, the three of us, many times, nature abhors a vacuum. And when there's a vacuum in the amount of information coming out of something, a community will rise. And we arose in social community at EMC from that presence in needing to collaborate inside inside that team. But I wouldn't say that it should sit there. And this is quite controversial, but I think it's consistent to say that most customer service organizations are looking to stay lean and look to outsource first and reduce costs because they're seen purely as a cost center. And when you look at social as a cost rather than an investment in future sales, you lose all of your momentum in this way that I think it'd be a constant battle of trusting whether or not, you know, people like the three of us should go to conferences and just chat with people and not have PowerPoints and not have lead generation to come back with and show our portfolio of people that we've brought in as leads. We're still a little dark magic and a good step away from being so clear about our metrics that we can do what we need to do. And customer service organizations are run like very well-oiled machines. And I think we'd turn into a cog that is not seen as desirable.
Yeah, it's hard to reduce some of what we do to some of those processes. What is beautiful is social lets a support organization become more proactive and not just reactive. So social is support is one of our spokes. And they're very active, and they're staffed with at least one full-time person, and other people think about it. And what the social has, both being listening to Twitter and that sort of thing, as well as the community, but as well as the tools they have made to be in social. So their blog, they've made video series, they've made their own site with video stuff. They've built in links into the product that go to support materials like videos and facts and KB. The KB, the knowledge base, is becoming more and more and more robust with more metadata and keywords and more proactive problems that you can actually almost read through it rather than just being, I filed a ticket, here's the knowledge base article that will solve your ticket. They have iPhone apps. They're doing all these different things. So social has really let them go from this organization that was measured on you know, how many calls they took and how many calls they closed to one that's really much more about teaching people how to succeed. And they're partnering with the training organization even to do this. So I think social has been a real boon to that, to our organization. I think it's been, we probably should have somebody on the podcast. I think it'd be an interesting conversation.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, this is one of the reasons why I don't think a single tool right now or a single social database across our entire enterprise is going to work. I don't want it, even though it's been proposed several times. And, you know, you do these maturity models where the highest level of maturity is we have one system and one source of truth, and that's going to be solve all of our problems. But right now, one of our stories is that, you know, our support department, and they had some extra money and they had a very big consulting organization in, and they did a little study of our social, and they recommended that, oh yeah, let's put this in place. And the thought process, if you go through the experiment, is the needs right now of the support organization for a social CRM are very different than the needs of the marketing organization for a social CRM. And, you know, the engineering organizations for social CRM, the demand gen organization, the influencer marketing organization, we all have slightly different needs for a social CRM. I think as sales, like a company like Salesforce, just to use them as an example, expands and tries to become all things to everybody, you know, I think actually they're going to have a challenge, because I don't know that you can jam all this stuff into a single database and make it usable by humans.
One other little thought here is, I'm listening to both of you. It seems in some ways that social has both arisen out of customer service in a lot of ways, and shaped and molded customer service, then co-opted a bit. And I will go ahead and say that, because you know, you can't put, and guilty party one here, you can't put a new tool, platform, process, anything in front of marketers without them wanting to see what they can do with it. You know, we abhor a vacuum and a blank space because we want to slap a sticker on it. And so marketing, PR, all these other departments kind of took it over to try to see what they could do with it. And it's interesting that it almost comes back full circle in the end to customer service, but yet with this new sort of twist and spin. So I think it's interesting that it is difficult to find where to put it, because it is all of these things. And I think that's why people struggle and put it in different places and end up having, it's like whack-a-mole. You end up having practitioners, social media practitioners, kind of pop up all over your organization. And I think successful teams, companies, et cetera, will find ways to empower the people who raise their hand and have an interest, rather than saying you aren't social media because you don't sit in XYZ department.
Yeah, there's true strength in the diversity of those that stand up to be social practitioners. And I have the utmost respect for all of our companies and many more out there to allowing others way outside of their normal day-to-day to jump in and experience it, be more customer-facing than they normally get to be.
Yeah. Have I told you guys about my theory of, well, I know I haven't told you about it because I haven't named it yet. So I've called it quotidian marketing or work product marketing or daily marketing. Here's the idea. It goes along with the themes we've been talking about. So as social pervades the organization, everybody is using social to talk to their constituents, social media channels to talk to their constituents. That might be a partner organization talking to the partners, education training organization talking to its potential customers, you know, support, as well as traditional marketing roles. And it can be customers talking or the customer organization talking to itself, or customers talking to each other. So as we do this, it's all happening in public. So we're on social media channels. It's all happening in the open. So this conversation that used to be locked up in email boxes and used to be locked up in flyers and used to be locked up in very esoteric and private channels is now happening in the open. And I think more and more it will be recognized that as part of the process of business, part of the marketing funnel, part of the buying decision-making process, people are using this spore, this evidence that the company is functioning on all cylinders in their decision-making process. And so the more open you can be, the more open your forum is for customers to talk to each other, the more open your partner marketing communication can be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The more your engineers and tech marketing can actually talk to customers, the more you can see customers having successes online and talking back to the mother company, the more powerful it's going to be in as a marketing tool and as a buying decision-making tool. I think people don't recognize that yet. I think all this communication happens incidentally as part of a business process, as part of your daily, quotidian, go about your goals. But I think it's actually untapped, hidden, and very valuable. And unfortunately, no one really pours money into it, but I think they should.
Huh.
Kinetic marketing?
It's a totally self-serving comment because I want more money. But
I like it a lot.
But it's a fundamentally new way that companies talk to their ecosystem.
And you know what,
and
John?
You can call it every company's a media company sort of idea, but it's even more it's less it's not like you're giving a speech. It's marketing by doing. It's being saved by works, not by faith.
Right. And there's something really interesting about that, and it's the terror that can induce in many people that want to only show pretty pictures. They want to show the highlight reel of the company, not the fumbling and the every single day of changing directions and arguing and changing their minds and then coming to a conclusion. They'd rather just show you that beautiful highlight reel at the end of all the fumbles and the process and the change. So really there's a sense that there's risk in showing the process, showing the sausage making.
I agree. I mean, I'm not advocating total, complete, 100% transparency and honesty, because there are some things that are between me and you, you know, between me and my customer. But it is a different way to think about it. And I agree. I don't want to like on some,
the line
support.
Is pushing. The line is pushing, though, without a doubt, that it's better to be more transparent than it is to be less.
Yeah. I don't want to solve a customer problem on Twitter, both because you can't do it in 140 characters and also because it's some private communication about their environment, our bugs, you know, what that interaction of the two. So, you know, that's much better served in a private channel. But so I don't, you know, but I think you're right. You're right in agreeing with me. We are going there.
And Amy, what's your take on this all?
I don't think there's a choice. I think that we've had these conversations too. We're all citizen journalists now. I think one of the most important things we can do for next gen is not necessarily job out our social media strategy to them before they're out of diapers, but to train us to be critical thinkers and engaged citizens. And in some ways, that's what we're talking about here, that we all have the tools to engage. And there are infinite famous stories of companies and brands that have made their mark on this kind of transparency that we can just name them. We could rattle them off of people who perform these acts of engagement in public so that you do see a bit of the sausage making. It is an opportunity for training and learning and engagement for everybody. So it even moves past it, you learn something in seeing the process. Again, I'm thinking about they don't teach math and reading in traditional ways. It's not as much see and say or you've got the wrong answer. It's so much more about process these days, which I think is a really smart way actually to teach kids, because you want them to get to an answer, but you want them to think critically. And I think in exposing some of these things with the tools of social media and doing that kind of constantly, constant drumbeat, we all learn. And it is high risk. I can imagine it's terrifying because you're going to see things you don't want to see. You're going to share things that might be uncomfortable. Yes, there's a place for privacy. I'm not advocating the equivalent of
a tech support open book.
Nudist colony.
Yeah. A tech support nudist colony. Yeah, I was going to say, I think I could sum up everything that I rattled on about where social can fit versus where it can't fit in saying that social cannot be risk-averse. It can't be owned by risk-averse organizations. Continuing that conversation and making it real personal with the three of us, what's our social career path look like? What does social...
We're doomed.
We're doomed. Elaborate, if you will.
We are the best buggy whip makers that money can buy.
Amish. I think we'll evolve out of our own title. I think the thing is the three of us have probably very intentionally chosen careers that are on the edge of marketing. I know we've talked before about we work in high tech, and there needs to be some crossover between technology, technical prowess and the social media trade. But I think as we routinize and do successfully what we do, it will get handed over to different departments and organizations and get absorbed by the Borg, if you will. And that we'll kind of keep pushing the edge. It's my suspicion. I started in web development. So I started in what's now called digital marketing before it had that name. And I feel like I'm always kind of walking to the outside edge of the type of marketing I'm doing just because I find it interesting to kind of see what's next and to keep going and pushing that envelope. And that's my prediction, that we'll continue to evolve and change. These mediums are not going away. These are just new forms of communication now. They are completely accepted if they're not necessarily respected or seen as bottom line serving. But I think they will become more and more, like I said, absorbed and routinized. So we'll keep moving.
Yeah. I mean, not to pat ourselves on the back too much, but yeah, we are kind of like the pioneers. We're in the Calistoga wagons. We came out west and we've had a good time, but the railroads are coming. You know, the program managers are coming. Yeah, the spreadsheets and the program managers and the social CRM, enterprise applications are coming. You know, so I don't know. I'm going to go live in the woods, I guess. But
just technical nomads looking for the next land to settle.
I think if you talk to the theorists, they'll tell you, they'll get all glassy eyed and tell you that there's this fundamental shift in business culture and it's going to more participatory, blah blah blah. I don't know how much I believe that. These are certainly a new set of tools that technology and connectivity have enabled. I think it is tough from a career path, though. So what are you going to do? So our group, we talked about hub and spoke. So either you become good at your hub, and I think most social groups are probably directors. Some of them are VPs. Or do you become more of a generalist? And to rise in the executive ranks, you kind of have to give up the thing you're specialized in and become a little more of an executive generalist. So you have to, our VP knows all about field marketing and partner marketing and marketing programs and demand gen campaigns and events and and the combination of all those, direct mail marketing and marketing operations, sales support and operations. So you have to, if you're going to rise in the ranks of marketing people, you've got to know about all the tools of modern day marketing. That's one career path. You can go become more of a technical specialist. I mean, the people we work with in our communities, all become kind of technical communicators. And that's a really interesting career path. Certainly not mine at this point, but that's a career path too. Or I guess you go be a consultant and tell people what to do. But I don't know if just the social media marketing person becomes already. I'm seeing much more crossover people who have marketing programs and social media responsibilities.
I completely agree with that. I think the concept of cross training is necessary. So as much as we have advocated on this program that if you're a technologist, that you should be conversant in social, I would say the inverse is 100% true. And pick whatever your subspecialty is, but I think that if you specialize in social and only social, that you're either going to have to go academic or, like you said, to perhaps on the agency side. But if you want to stay client side, that you're going to have to diversify, because you must know how your particular track fits in the larger picture for to go up the rungs. I mean, you can be the worker bee, you can do the task oriented stuff, but unless you have some cross-disciplinary training, and most of us do, but to really keep that fresh, to understand how, even if social is your passion, to understand how it fits in that larger marketing mix and how that pertains back to the business and how it engages with the technology at as a whole.
Brilliant. You're dead on point. I'll tell you, the only thing that I know is that whatever I'm working on, whatever I'm talking about, it's probably going to, when you break it down, it's going to lead to ones and zeros underneath all the different covers that we layer up upon it. So as long as I'm talking about ones and zeros at the end of the day, I certainly will continue to be having fun.
Works for me. I mean, there is this other strand called community manager, and it's kind of what we do, but there's a whole set of conferences and people and gatherings around people who call themselves community managers. Maybe we should invite some of them on the show as well, because I think they have a similar perspective as us. But again, that's a pretty hands-on, daily, get-your-hands-dirty sort of job.
Yeah. I think we explored really talking about where, again, you know, beating into the details of being org chart junkies and trying to figure out whether social has a single home or if it's best distributed. And then we brought it all the way through a little bit more personal. Where's our career? Where are our careers going to be going in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years? Feeling pretty good about things. Any final words of wisdom from either of you? Amy, do you want to start?
Well, as always, I love to end on a question. So I'm really curious what our listeners think, especially those who are not necessarily agreeing with us or work in a different company and have a different model. If you want to tweet at us at geek_whisperers, I'm really interested in how your organization's set up and what you sort of see as some of the pros and cons. We'll obviously get this up on the website and can have the conversation there as well. But I'm really curious to poll the audience to see who has a system they think is working.
Hmm. And John?
I don't know. Sounds good to me. I don't know how any of this works. I just do it. You know,
with alarms.
You know, half the stuff that comes out of my mouth, I don't believe either. I mean, we're not particularly good as a society at social media yet, too, though. We were just at the beginning. You know, a lot of our social media plans are terrible, and they don't work, and they're kind of dumb. So I think there's a lot for us to all learn, you know, and I am only an egg. I try to learn every day.
I like it. Try to suck a little bit less every day is a personal mantra. Well, with those words of wisdom from all three of your fellow Geek Whisperers, we are happy to hear back from you. Please be sure to comment on our website and tweet at us with more thoughts. Thanks, and have a great week. Drop the mic.
Meow.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.